Welcome to the Science, Microbes, and Health podcast, covering emerging topics and challenges in the fields of probiotics, prebiotics, synbiotics, postbiotics, and fermented foods. This is the podcast of the International Scientific Association for Probiotics and Prebiotics, known as ISAP, a nonprofit scientific organization dedicated to advancing the science of these fields. Check us out at www.isapscience.org. I'm Dr. Mary Ellen Sanders, ISAP's Executive Science Officer. I hope you enjoy this episode with your hosts from the ISAP Board of Directors, Professor Colin Hill and Professor Dan Tancredi.
Hi, everybody. My name is Colin Hill.
And I'm Daniel Tancredi.
And today on the podcast, our guest is Sarah Labeer from Antwerp in Belgium. And she's going to tell us about the ISALA project.
Yes, it is a citizen science project on the female microbiome with a large focus on the vaginal microbiome, but we also sample other human body sites.
It's an incredible study, the largest study of healthy women in the world. And it seems that you've been remarkably successful in achieving this vision, Sarah. You launched it the first month that the pandemic affected the world's. You were trying to get 200 women, and how many have you gotten so far?
So indeed, we actually only had the idea to recruit 200 women. And with that number, I would already have been very happy because I wanted to have a good reference population of healthy women to really build up a very nice reference map of how a healthy vaginal microbiome looks like. And then we launched a call in March 2020, just before the pandemic started. Then we didn't know what to do with the recruitment when the pandemic really started. But then as soon as we launched it, I think it was the 21st of March or so, then we had a lot of inscriptions on our website. And after 10 days, more than 6,000 women had registered. And actually, we had made a promise that every woman who registered and did fill in a very long questionnaire, they were all invited to send a vaginal swab. So at that moment, I thought, okay, when I saw 6,000 registrations, I was doing a quick calculation and I said, we have to stop registrations because otherwise we will not be able to just to pay everything and to do all the logistics in, because we are a small country in Belgium. So it was actually also for us overwhelming to see this enthusiasm of women wanting to participate.
You know, how did you pitch it to women that they should take part?
Yeah, we made a call. We had a tagline and that was let's swap because we wanted to motivate women that they could take a swap within the privacy of their own house. And we said it was important that the vaginal microbiome should be studied in more detail to better understand what's held. And what I heard from many women, including many friends, but also family members and so on, is that they really wanted to participate to help other women because they knew some people in the family or friends that had problems with getting pregnant or had recurrent bladder infections or. And they all actually understood the scientific message that it was necessary to do this research to help other women. But also men were very enthusiastic. Sons, they did motivate their mothers, or men did motivate their partners to participate. So that was actually very nice.
Yes, because you're really taking on some of the biggest challenges that we face. Can you talk about the importance, for example, in trying to prevent antibiotic resistance and other reasons that all of us should be interested in trying to understand the microbial communities in the vagina?
Yeah, that was actually the biggest motivation because gynecology and vaginal infections is really an area where a lot of antibiotics is being used. Also in Belgium, I think almost every woman who delivers takes an antibiotic course. And we as microbiologists, we understand that's probably not the best thing to do because not only because of antibiotic resistance, but also because you actually also prevents a good start for the microbiome of the baby. But there are no alternatives to prevent infections or to treat infections. And if you just look at how the vaginal microbiome is being built up, it's surprising, or it's for me as a microbiologist a little bit disappointing that's not a lot of probiotic strategies or microbiome strategies are being developed or under study in for the vaginal microbiome. So it was also for us a big motivation. There are so many different conditions that I think theoretically could be helped by some better microbiome research that it's important to do so.
And growing up as a microbiologist, I would have been told the vagina is uninteresting microbiologically. There's just some lactobacilli and they reduce the pH and there's not really much going on. And in fact, we kind of hear that a lack of diversity makes a healthy vaginal microbiome, while the opposite is true of every other microbiome in existence. I hope you're going to tell me that's not correct.
That's not correct. That is boring. Yeah? And it's also, as a microbiologist, it's also really fascinating. Why is a vagina dominated by lactobacilli under healthy conditions? Why is it only the case in humans and not in closely related primates or other animals? What's the biology and the evolutionary history behind that? That was actually also for me a very important question to answer in this ISALA project, because it's also part within my ERC project. And it's also what we already now see is that lactobacilli, they do much more than only producing lactic acid in the vagina. They are really bioreactors producing a lot of active metabolites, and there's a lot of interactions going on. It's also much more diverse than we thought, but at strain and species level, and that's also something interesting to explore in more detail.
Now, what I was curious about was what do we know about the role of the vaginal microbiome in maintaining health?
Yeah, what we know based on all research that has been done, definitely also before the ISALA project, is that there's a clear association between the relative abundance and also the dominance, and actually also the absolute abundance numbers of lactobacilli and health. So if there are a lot of lactobacilli, women are generally healthy, and it's actually not novel knowledge. It's known for more than 100 years when people were just using the microscope to study the vaginal microbiome. If they just could see a lot of rod-shaped bacteria, they saw clear associations with health. And when they saw a lot of different shapes and forms, gynecologists already had associations with that. That's not a good sign. But that's not the only association with health. And now we start to understand that the vaginal lactobacilli, they are also necessary to prevent inflammation in the vagina. And that's also a very common condition, not only the vagina, but also the whole reproductive tract and the endometrium and so on. There's, when something is wrong, often inflammation is going on. And that's also associated with the vaginal microbiome composition. And another thing we are really intrigued by is that they also produce other metabolites, maybe also even neurologically active compounds or vitamins or other bioactive molecules I would love to explore.
Now, that's really fascinating. And forgive my ignorance now again, but is the vagina an aerobic or an anaerobic environment, or do we get a mixture of both environments there? Because I was curious to see that there are some bacteria that I would have considered anaerobes that you pick up in your study as well.
Yeah, very good question. Actually, that's also something we still are exploring, because it's a quite anaerobic condition, and the sugar that is present there is glycogen, and it's being degraded to glucose and mannose and this kind of sugars. And so it's a fermentation environment. It's anaerobic, but also you see also some signs of aerobic conditions. So I think it's similar as in the gastrointestinal tract, that there are different niches and environments, but it has not been well studied. So it's a very good question that also needs further exploration.
Can you talk about the different environmental influences, like nutrition and even underwear and the community that you live in?
So that was also the idea behind the ISALA project, that we would ask women to donate a vaginal swab, but at the same time, we asked them to provide us a lot of metadata through questionnaires. So we asked them what they ate and the 24 hours before they gave a sample, but also their general food frequency habits. We asked how many hours they did sleep or did some activity and so on. And indeed also the underwear they wore just before the 24 hours before, whether they used hygienic products and so on. And that was then the big calculation we did, trying to find patterns between the vaginal microbiome profiles and all the answers to the questionnaires. And then we could see some patterns. We wanted to better understand when do we see a high dominance of lactobacillus and lactobacillus crispatus in particular. and when not. And then we saw some patterns. For example, yeah, your first question was foods. I did not expect a lot of impact, because food has an impact on the gastrointestinal tract, and the vagina is really a little bit further away, so it's not a direct impact. But we did see some impact. We saw, for example, that women who ate a lot of vegetables the 24 hours before had more lactobacillus crispatus. When they ate a lot of fish, it was also good, or it was associated with more lactobacilli. Alcohol was also not so negative, while the opposite was found for example, eating meat. Although I must say the association, they were definitely significant, statistically significant, but whether there's really a direct causal effect, it's really something that must be explored in the future.
And during, say, the menstrual cycle, does that make a big impact at which point in the menstrual cycle the woman takes the sample?
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's actually the biggest impact, is your age and your stage within the menstrual cycle. And that's something we did expect, because estrogen is really an important hormone for the production of glycogen, and glycogen is really the food source for the lactobacilli. So age and the menstrual cycle were expected to have a lot of impact. What we did not expect was that also having had children was associated with a significant different composition of the microbiome, and actually not what we expected. So we saw less lactobacillus crispatus in the women who had ever delivered a baby.
Could that be linked to this antibiotic treatment that women get after having a baby? Or
that's a very good point. That's something we are now exploring. What could be the reason? Could that be a reason, or anatomical changes during delivery, or maybe some hormonal changes are causing the change? And it might also not be that dramatic, because we already know from previous research from other colleagues that when women get pregnant again, that the lactobacilli levels, they do increase again. So it might also be that it's not so bad for a second pregnancy, but it was quite significantly associated, and it was not something we did expect.
And this study was cross-sectional, I guess, but did you follow any women longitudinally to see how stable is the vaginal microbiome within an individual, and does it change over time?
Yeah, a very good point. So actually, I told in the beginning, our idea was to recruit around 200 women, and we did follow up the 200, actually almost 300 women. We did follow up them for two menstrual cycles to see how stable their vaginal microbiome is. And I think we sampled every week. And then it's also intriguing to see that the women with a lot of lactobacillus, especially lactobacillus crispatus, almost 90% of those women had the same species dominating every week. So it was very stable, while the opposite was found for the women dominated by other taxa like Gardnerella or Prevotella. They had a less stable vaginal microbiome.
I love the way that you characterize, from a science communication standpoint, the predominant strains or taxonomic groups. So you call them passports, and you started off, I think, with 8 different groups, and your research has already uncovered that there are 2 additional ones that you would nominate. So can you talk a little bit about how did you come up with these brilliant ways to communicate to the entire community, not just microbiologists?
That was actually not an easy task, because it's really part of science communication. And as you all, scientists are aware, microbiome profiles are quite complex to explain to layman's people. So we had vaginal microbiome profiles ready within a few months, and we wanted to communicate as soon as possible, also before the paper would have been out. So our promise was we will be as rapid as possible, but also as scientifically correct as possible. And as you are probably aware, it's not so easy to put people into categories based on their vaginal microbiome or gut microbiome profile. You have these enterotypes, or in our field, you have the community states types, but then it's still difficult to communicate. So we had a lot of interactive discussions and also a brainstorm sessions with our communication specialists on, look, these are the profiles we have, this is what we currently know about the function and the activity of the vaginal microbial taxa, but this is also what we don't know yet. For example, the women who were dominated by Lactobacillus crispatus, that was not so difficult for science communication because we could say, okay, we already know that Lactobacillus crispatus has a very good role in the vagina. It produces lactic acid. Its average genome size is almost 2 megabases. And we know these molecules are produced by crispatus. It's certainly beneficial. So that was okay. But then for the other women, we had to think a little bit more on how to do it. And then indeed, we came up with this passport idea of giving a good explanation on how the bacteria look like, where they do occur, what we already know, what we don't know yet, where else can you find them? And also, it made me realize as a scientist that it's okay to also communicate to people that a lot is still not known. So just be honest about it and be honest that maybe we, for example, associate Gardnerella with not really a beneficial microbiome profile. If a woman is healthy and has no complaints at all, then it's not bad. And then also as scientists, we should also not try to oversimplify and say it's a less beneficial taxa, because actually we don't know what, we just know that Lactobacillus is generally beneficial, but doesn't mean that Gardnerella is not beneficial.
And obviously the vagina is also the birth canal. Do we know anything about, do women transfer their vaginal microbiomes to their female babies?
Yeah, that's a very good point. But it's known that they transfer their vaginal bacteria to their babies and to their skin, their nose, and even their gastrointestinal tract. But then the lactobacilli or all the other vaginal taxa, they're being distributed and dispersed, and they generally will not become the dominant taxa. Then the next question is, do daughters, do they? And do the lactobacilli have their mothers also end up in their vagina? And is it that's really the same one? That we don't know yet, but we have now recently received funding, and actually our next call next autumn will be on mother-daughter pairs and also sisters. And we want to compare their vaginal microbiome really at metagenome level or strain level to see whether we really inherit the lactobacilli from our mothers, or maybe it's also just you can also in a way inoculate your vagina with environmental lactobacilli that's just come from food or another source.
Speaking of sisters, can you talk about, this is a citizen science project, and it's notable just in the history of citizen science because it involves intimate data collection. But with the microbiome, we know that there might be geographical influences, and you already have two sister projects, one in Peru and one in Switzerland. Can you talk a little bit about how those came about and the importance of studying, being able to have data from all around the world?
Yeah, actually, it was also quite spontaneously organized because I have a Peruvian postdoc in my lab, and she was following the things we were organizing and said, oh, I would love to organize it also in my home country, although it's much more difficult logistically because, for example, internet is not always working that well in Peru, and also just to reach women. But we thought, it's a really nice idea to do it in different countries. And also from a communication point of view, we thought, then it's also nice to give this project another name, because I don't think I have mentioned it already before, but Isella is named in Belgium after Isella van Dist, the first female doctor in Belgium. And then we thought, it would be nice to organize a sisterhood project, for example, in Peru, and then we would name it the Laura Project after the first female doctor in Peru. And then we had other postdocs, they had some colleagues in Switzerland, and they saw our social media and said, we would love to do the same in Switzerland, because like Belgium, actually almost no research is going on the vaginal microbiome, but even more in general on women's health. And we would love to also recruit some women for a citizen science study in our country. Can we use your branding and stuff? Yes, of course. Isella is an open science project. You can use the same. You can use our material, and even you can be inspired by us. So they named the project in Switzerland the Marie Project after the first female doctor in Switzerland. And
I thought it was nice that it was Switzerland, because Isella van Dist, the first Belgian female doctor, had to go to Switzerland to get her classics training so that she could then pursue the medical education that was required. Let's also give a shout out to Laura Esther Rodriguez Dulato and Marie Heim Voigtland, the first female physicians, respectively, in Peru and in Switzerland.
Wonderful idea to name them after these female leaders and heroes, I guess, within their countries. Mm-hmm. Given that they're named after doctors, I guess, turned a little bit towards disease. Do you think the microbiome has any role in protecting against or making women more vulnerable to UTIs or STDs, urinary tract infections, or sexually transmitted diseases?
Yeah, that's actually, I think, the best documented role is that, for example, lactobacillus dominated vagina can protect against STIs and urinary tract infections. And the other way around, if you have less lactobacillus but more gonorrhea or prevotella or more a more diverse vaginal microbiota, there's a clear association with more, for example, more HIV infection or even HPV infections, so viral infections. So there is a clear association that they can protect against disease.
So it seems like you're well ahead of the other microbiome scientists. In the gut microbiome, the only thing I ever hear is we simply do not know what is a good gut microbiome. And I don't think we know it for the skin or for the lungs, but it feels like you do know really what a good vaginal microbiome is. Could you characterize one?
I think we are in a way ahead with research on the vaginal microbiome, but it's not well known within the microbiome field. So it's in a way also for me a little bit disturbing. I don't know well the reason, or maybe that's why a citizen science project is important to just communicate also about this, that maybe it's also even for microbiome therapeutic development. I think we can learn a lot from the vaginal microbiome. And I also believe that that's an important area where we will really see some very good microbiome therapeutics being developed.
Well, part of that is because of brilliant scientists like you, Sarah, helping, you know, accelerate the intervention development project. One of the things you do in this project that's amazing is collect both blue and pink swabs. Can you talk about why you're not just interested in characterizing what microbes are there, but what might be able to grow there if it were an intervention or something like that?
Yeah, that's a good point. And the blue and the pink swabs is because we had the blue ones were for DNA extraction and the pink ones were for culture. But culture was from the beginning an important point because our ultimate dream is to isolate really a lot of lactobacilli that we could screen for the development of live biotherapeutic products or vaginal probiotics. And the goal is really to do a rational, very targeted screening of the lactobacilli for specific conditions. For example, against, that's actually some work I already did in my postdoc. If you want to target lactobacilli against HIV, then I would love them to be able to really bind to the HIV and block the infection and work at specific points in the infection cycle. While if you want a lactobacillus to prevent inflammation, then you need a lactobacillus with other strain or species specific properties. And that's also the nice idea or the nice outcome that now we have thousands and thousands of different volunteers. So we have also every day we are culturing novel lactobacilli. We have a very nice biobank now of lactobacilli for further developments.
And one of my heroes, anyway, Gregor Reid, of course, of ISAP fame. I mean, I wouldn't say he pioneered this area, but he's certainly a very significant player in this whole field of vaginal probiotics. Do you think there's good evidence for the benefits of vaginal probiotics?
Yeah, he's a very important pioneer. I think already 40 years ago, he had the idea to use lactobacilli to prevent urinary tract infections and vaginal infections. And actually also the strains he has been working on, we are still studying them in our lab, and they actually have very nice properties. There are some clinical trials that have already been done, and they show some benefits, for example, for the prevention of bacterial vaginosis or recurrent infections, even vaginal candida infections or fungal infections. The data are promising. What they suffer from is that most of the time the treatment groups are not that large, but that's for most probiotic studies. And it's also not so easy to find enough funding to do it really in a very robust way. So I hope that some investors will now provide some funding that these trials can be done now in some bigger numbers, and then also the data will become better.
And do you know what are, in your opinion at least, what are the big research questions remaining to be answered in this field?
What is the best probiotic species for the vaginal microbiome? Do we really have to focus on Lactobacillus crispatus? Because that's what now we know, clearly know that this is the most dominant species. And then the field has to develop more Lactobacillus crispatus probiotics because there are not so many yet in development. But I'm not sure whether that's really necessary. I think sometimes what we see now also in our research is that many different species of Lactobacilli, but even Lactobacilli saya with the new taxonomy, they co-occur in the vagina. And I think sometimes it can also be useful to use cocktails of Lactobacilli, but then even combined with maybe a prebiotic and a hormone, because I think it will not be that easy that just giving a Lactobacillus will be able to engraft and permanently cure your vagina if you have an infection. I think we still need to better understand what's the physiology of the vagina, how the ecosystem works, how important are the hormones and other human physiological factors. That's a key question. And then another key question that I feel the field's really looking for to better understand is what's the role of the lactobacilli in fertility and getting pregnant, because that's actually not known. There are some predictions that they could play a role, but there are not many data on that.
Thanks so much for telling us about this really inspirational and important work. And we look forward to seeing amazing results continue to come out of this project, Dr. Labir.
Yeah, thanks, Sarah.
Thank you very much for the nice questions.